back to Shattering Mist, this just in. 26 people were murdered and 38 were mutilated today when a car bomb exploded in a parking lot near St. John's Roman Catholic Church in a southern neighborhood of Baghdad. Here, Muslims, a satanic religion, thought that their God would want them to drive a car full of explosives into a group of women and children that were celebrating another pagan holiday, who had gathered to in service to their imaginary God on this day of pagan celebrations. And the two religions, one annihilated the participants of the other. It is one of many reasons that God absolutely, completely, and totally detests religion. Now, before we go to answer the second part of the first caller's questions about the mention of virginity relative to the birth, and share what is actually written in Yeshayah in the seventh chapter, I have a very dear friend, a brother, a man that has participated in this program before. His name is William, and we affectionately call him William the elevator man, because that is the way that he earns a living for his family. And so it's my pleasure to welcome William back to the program. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Hello, Yada. Thank you for that introduction. How are you?
I'm great. It's always, you know, when I see your name, I always brings a smile to my face. You know, as I said, there's just something that is, there's a tenor to your voice and that comes from a character and an understanding that I really enjoy. So you're just one of my favorite people. We've never met in person. I only know you by your words and by the sound of your voice. And yet, I am honored to know you and call you brother.
Well, if we don't get to meet in this lifetime, I'm sure we'll hang out when we go home.
Oh man, I'm expecting to do a whole lot of exploring with you. I think you seem to me like you'd be a fun guy to hang with.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm all about having fun.
Okay, well, then we have that in common with the individual who brought us together, Yahweh. He is also likes to have fun. Well, I understand you wanted to talk a bit about Christmas.
Well, you know, one of the things that, for me, that I've been struggling with, and I'm sure others that are that have come into the truth are struggling with, you know, when I'm out there and people are like, Merry Christmas and this, that, yeah, I try to be respectful in the sense that, you know, I understand that most people don't get it. They don't know. They haven't done their due diligence.
Right.
And they don't understand what they're doing. Right. They're just doing it because it's been passed on from generation.
It's a societal tradition. You know, it's Christmas is as equal parts a societal tradition as it is religious holiday. And you're right. So what do you do, particularly if somebody says, you know, I want you to come to our Christmas party, or I want you to, says Merry Christmas, you know. Yesterday, we have a husband and wife that help us clean our home. And they're Roman Catholic, as are most Hispanic couples. And they left by saying Merry Christmas.
Right.
Now, I didn't return the greeting, but what good would it have been for me to be antagonistic and say, don't say that to me. I am opposed to Christmas. I don't celebrate it. You know, to go into an abusive response, even though, you know, it's true, what purpose would it serve?
Right, and sometimes I even forget, because maybe we're just in the flow of the conversation, and they'll say, like, Happy Holidays and Merry Christmas. And I'm like, you too. And then I regret it afterwards. I'm like, oh, man, you know, I should.
Yeah, me too. I've done that too. I'm a little more careful now than I used to be. But I have done the same thing. And I say, ah, boy, you know, it's one thing. You know, my challenge is that, you know, if we're in a public forum like this, and there's lots of people that are listening to us, and they've chosen to listen to us, then if somebody says, speaks positively of Christmas here, then it's my obligation, my responsibility to speak out against it and condemn it. But with everybody that I contact, if you know, I look at it as if somebody is genuinely wants to know the truth, then we have a responsibility, and it's a joyous responsibility to lead them to the truth. But if somebody is just being religious or, you know, your paths are barely crossing, that's really not the time to go into an explanation that they're wrong, but there is a truth out there worth knowing. There's really just no way to work it in. You don't see Yahusha doing it either.
Right.
And, you know, he's a pretty good example to follow.
Right, right. And of course, that's the goal, right, to stay on,
right,
on the path that he's blazed for us.
Right.
But, you know, here's what happened to me, and again,
okay,
maybe others can relate to this. There was a get together where, you know, they were like, yeah, it's a Christmas party, and I'm like, oh, you know, I don't do that. And so one of the guys, because I'm in a role of leadership at work, and so he's like, it wouldn't be the same if you wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, well, you know, after seeking advice, right, and
right,
and just processing this, I said, okay, I'm gonna be there for the guys, right? I'm not there for,
right,
for the,
yeah,
holiday.
In fact, you sent me a letter,
right,
on this,
correct,
and I'm sure you thought you talked to, you've got a lot of good friends that know Yahweh, and asked their advice as well, and I recall that my sentiments to you were, you know, to go and spend time with the guys and continue to be the upright individual that you are and a source of truth in their midst, that the likelihood that something good could actually happen as a result of that versus something bad, I think, is in favor of good. And so,
and that's exactly what happened. That's exactly.
Oh, okay.
Happened.
All right. So,
right. Right.
That's great.
Maybe 100 guys that were there. One guy, you know, he was like, wow. And you know, it kind of got around quickly that I don't celebrate,
right,
Christmas, but that
but
I
you celebrate. But you celebrate friendships. The guys that you work,
yes,
with, you care about.
Right.
Right.
It's all about,
right,
relationships, right?
Right. Particularly since you're in a management position, a leadership position, it's important that the guys know that you care about them and you support them as people, not just as employees.
And that's genuine. Right.
Yeah.
Really,
that's why one of the things that comes through with your voice that I is one of the reasons I like you so much. It is genuine.
Thank
yeah.
you. So here's the thing.
Yeah.
One of the guys really got upset. He got upset. And then he apologized afterwards. But, you know, he pretty much cursed me out. And so that's what my question is. How do you deal with that? I mean, it's tough. It's really tough.
A guy cursed you out because you were a bah humbug on his Christmas.
Right. I mean, he was upset, violently upset. And so I get this a lot, not
yeah.
just at work, but I noticed during this time of the year, it's like, man, we're almost in danger of getting hurt out there.
And, yeah, in fact, it sounds like the same thing happened to you as happened to Scott, who is working behind the scenes today, posting his program, is that Scott had the same thing, where a religious individual came into the GCN offices and was very condemning of him, saying, you know, that he was a lost cause and a lost soul because he did not agree with the Christmas and Christian message that this pastor was preaching at the GCN offices, and didn't even want to listen to him. And so and he was very aggressive with Scott's boss after the meeting, condemning Scott, that just as now you are explaining this happened at your at the get together with the guys,
which is still funny to me. It's the pot calling the kettle black. If I'm a lost soul, what is he? I mean,
yes, yeah, he's sitting there. He was trying to promote Christianity to you.
Yeah, it's a ubiquitous movement. I mean, everywhere I go, I'm having to deal with this. And then, of course, the toughest part is my kids, right? I have a six-year-old,
right.
and she's
right.
seeing all of this all around her. You can't escape it. You can't escape
correct.
It. So, I mean, for me, what I do is I go back to my source of strength, and that's Yahweh, and I read his word. I study it. I mean, it impacts
yeah.
me. And
yes.
And so if you're a lover of the truth, then this is how we overcome this time
yeah.
of year.
Yeah. And, you know, what I would do with an individual that becomes aggressive and is to say, you know, you have chosen to believe what the church has told you. I happen to know that what the church has told you is untrue, and I can prove it. And if you would like to know the truth, I'm happy to share it with you. If you have no interest in considering the evidence or what God actually had to say, then my recommendation is that you keep your faith to yourself.
Right. And they have a right to do that. They have a right to do that. Just like I have a right to not accept the traditions of man. You know, I feel I should be respected as well. And so, I'm not an advocate of violence. I try to always walk away from these things. But I could tell you this: it's getting uglier and uglier every year.
Yeah, I do expect that the rage and this blend of religion and patriotism and militarism are going to explode, and that you're going to see both the socialist secular humanists and devout Christians respond very much like Muslims are responding today, where their rage boils over into violence. So that is what I expect. I think there's a reason that, Yahweh really likes having witnesses, folks like you, William, who are willing, when given the opportunity, to lead people to the truth. And yet, before he returns and before his tribulation, the tribulation begins, he is removing us, his children. And I think the reason he's removing his children is that a good father cannot put those he loves in harm's way. And I think that as we move forward about 13 or 14 years from now, it is going to get so violent here that anyone who articulates Yah's Torah teachings will be assailed, and then God doesn't want that happening to his children, and so he's going to remove us. And I think it's the only reason that he's going to remove us on the Teruah harvest prior to the tribulation, is that what you're saying is true, that we're on the cusp of having faith turn to rage.
Wow.
It is indeed a scary time, and it's never more manifest than it is now. And I think that all we can do is what you do. Yahusha was always willing to walk out into public forums and to interact with people just as you did. And it's the way that he interacted with them that is the example that we should follow. And everything you said that's what you did. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation both with Scott and with William. There was a common thread, William, in your story and also with Scott's story that I want to explore a bit. And that is that people who are aggressively supportive of a belief system, when they find someone that is outside of that belief system, that does not concur with their belief, they become angry. They become aggressive. And the reason for that is the difference between knowing and believing. You know, we have come to know Yahweh because he has made himself known to us through his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. What somebody says to me that is in conflict with Yah's presentation of himself and his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, therefore, is irrelevant to me. I don't care how many Muslims or Christians write me condemning me. It just doesn't even matter. It doesn't faze me. But for the person of, because that's, I know, for the person of belief, someone who does not share their belief is a tremendous threat to them. It's why, throughout the time that Christianity, or even now today when Islam has dominion over a nation, they will not tolerate anyone questioning the faith, because it has a tendency to chip away at their belief system. And that's the reason that the person got angry with you, William. It's the reason why the person became angry with you, Scott, is that a person who believes has to have everyone around them share the same belief, or their belief weakens. It's a powerful difference between knowing and believing.
Yeah.
Right. You said something yesterday that resonated with me. You said belief is the remedy for not knowing.
Yes.
And it's so true. It's so
yes.
True.
Yeah, when you know what was very blunt and bold in his Torah?
Right.
He provided us with insights into his nature, into his character, into his plan, into what he was offering, and then promises regarding it that would be fulfilled throughout time that we could use to evaluate whether or not he can be trusted. And by incorporating the most brilliant presentation ever afforded humankind with these prophetic markers along the way that were revealed and committed to parchment hundreds of years and sometimes thousands of years before they occurred, God proved that he authored his Torah, proved that he exists, proved that we can trust what he had to say about himself and the covenant that he was offering. And so when you spend the time studying what he had to say, knowing that he proved himself, there's no room for belief. There's no need for faith. You know. And once you know, you can trust and rely. And that is so vastly superior to believing. I mean, there is no reason to believe unless you don't know.
Right. And this is occurring today, by the way. I mean, where we have these religious clerics who claim to be leading the flock, leading the masses astray, and this is why Yahusha said in Matanyahu 15:7-9, he called them hypocrites.
Of course.
He called them hypocrites.
You know, today I just saw a picture that just came across the news wires of a bunch of old lady and women in religious garb, probably nuns, and a bunch of men dressed up in clerical costumes, looking like absolute fools, bowing down, all crowded in this shrine that was built in Bethlehem, that's supposed to be the little cubicle in the rock where their God was born. And they're all bowing down and, you know, this religious service in this room. And you say, what on earth is wrong with you? You ignore what he did. He celebrated Passover. He celebrated and was the living embodiment of unyeasted bread. He was the living embodiment again of firstborn children of Bukurim. And gave us this wonderful gift of the promise of seven of Shavuah. And you don't celebrate any one of those dates. You don't acknowledge a single one of them. And yet, instead, you've got this religious act on the winter solstice to a pagan-based deity that was actually born, and that later the next year you're going to celebrate his death and bodily resurrection in keeping with all of the other pagan religious teachings and completely ignore what God actually revealed? You know, it's sick. It's putrid. It's disgusting that people have replaced a genuine, wonderful relationship with God as our Father with sickening, disgusting religious myths and rituals. We'll be back after the commercial break. So, William, this time of year, we all have a choice. You can choose to celebrate the pagan festivals of the birth of the Son of the Sun and bow down and try to glorify a God that seems to be in need of glorification in a religious context. Or you can answer the actual creator of the sun's invitation and meet with him and camp out with him on Sukkah and be part of his family. And rather than you glorifying him, he will glorify you, enriching you and empowering you. It doesn't seem like a difficult choice to make.
No, it's not. It's not.
I mean, why would anybody choose Christmas over tabernacles, over Sukkah shelters?
Because they feel good. It's a good feeling, and you know, that's what Hasatan does. He lets you have a little bit of a good too. But it's it's disguised.
Yeah, so by going along with societal customs, there's a feeling that you belong resonates with the people. That's the reason why, again, God is so opposed to religious and political institutions, is because they create this sense of oneness and of belonging and of dependence that is so counter to participating in His covenant. I do want to share the statement about the virgin birth, because I think it is interesting to listen to. We can't rely on that which is written in the so-called Christian New Testament, but I can at least share what was said, and Yashayah, and feel free to comment on this as we move through it, William, and also Scott. And once again, Yahweh spoke to Achaz. Achaz is the king of Yehuda. It means that he has grasp hold and he has been enveloped, that he has been settled is what his name means. So once again, Yahweh spoke to Achaz to say, "For you ask for a sign, for a miracle, an oath, a proof, a promise, an illustration, by means of an association with Yahweh your God. One which is profound and difficult to question, even towering high into the highest dimensions." So here's humankind saying, you've given us your Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and we've read it, but we would like it. Can you give us another sign of how you're going to make all of this work? And by the way, this is in the context of the destruction of Damascus. So it speaks both to, in one way, to his sixth arrival, and in another to his seventh. So it goes on to say, "But Achaz said, I have not, am not, and will not actually ask, and nor was I, am I, or will I attempt to put Yahweh to the test." So here's Achaz saying, I get it. We have a relationship. I know you. You're talking to me. I'm talking to with you. I'm not trying to say that you need to provide a sign. I get it already. But the people are asking for a sign, so I'm going to ask anyway just because I know the people want this. And so he, now this is Yahweh, said, "Please listen. Na shama," which is what we do so poorly. You know, Christians, particularly on this day, want to glorify their God. I mean, as if a man can add anything to God. And God is saying, rather than you spouting all this stuff to me, I'd like you to listen. So he says, please listen. Nashama, family, Beeth of Dod, of this is the beloved family. Questioning whether that from so few it would be possible that indeed men would be capable, even with their God. So he's saying the very existence of Yisrael, with so few, so unempowered individuals in the midst of these mighty empires of Egypt and Assyria and Babylon and the Hittites, that you would even exist if it not for me. Your very existence is dependent upon my support of you.
Well,
then he goes on to say, "So therefore, accordingly, Yahweh himself, he actually bestowed this to me, saying, behold, the pregnant virgin, the sign, the oath, the promise, the miracle, the proof of the pregnant virgin." This is from Ha Alma Here, a young woman who has conceived but has never been married. It's from Alam. Alama is from Alam, which means one who is not yet known. You know, in the ancient world, to be known was the concept of actually consummating a marriage. You came to know your wife. That's the scriptural sense here that's being communicated. So this would be a young woman who was not yet known. We would use virgin. And pregnant virgin in this particular case, when giving birth to a son. So this is the sign. Behold, the sign of the pregnant virgin when giving birth to the son. Indeed, his name, his shem, his reputation shall be proclaimed, shall be invited, called out. This is from Kara, read and recited, Emmanuel, which means with us and beside us is God. So that's the statement regarding virginity. And it's presented as a sign in the sense that God is saying that there's going to be a young woman that is not going to have had intercourse with any man, that he is going to cause this child that will be known to us as his son, as God with us. And does he explain how he artificially inseminated the woman? No. But he wrote the code DNA. You know, he is the author of RNA. You know, someone called the other day and was mentioning that, you know, there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet and there are 22 amino acids. You know, when you study amino acids, the first thing that you find is that DNA is transcribed, which is a term used to speak about writing, to form RNA. And that all the scientific journals explain that RNA is then translated to create these amino acids. Every scientist in the world that studies these things recognizes that DNA is the language of life and that languages do not spontaneously occur. The author of the Hebrew language that has brought us the Torah is the author of DNA. And he has, therefore, the ability, having created DNA, to artificially inseminate Miriam, and did.
And what's amazing about DNA, it's actually programmed. It's literally programmed.
Right. It's a computer code.
Four digits, right, four letters.
Right.
That there's an interesting book called The Language of God, and it talks about that. Francis Collins is the author. It's pretty good. I mean, he's a Christian, but the information's pretty amazing as he's a scientist, a doctor, and so forth. And so it's a good read, but, there's so much evidence that, you know, scientists refer to him as an intelligent designer, but we know that he is Yahweh.
Yes. He gave us his name. He gave us his name. And he's literally saying that he has the capability, because he's the author of life, to cause a woman who has not yet known a man to give birth to a child that will represent him, because that child will be known as God with us. God has but one name. He is Yahweh. Yahweh with us is Yahusha. And so that is what he is saying here. And is it meaningful? And on a 1 to 10 scale of things that are meaningful, this is probably a 1. The concept of being known as God with us, I would say that's probably a 5 on the 1 to 10 scale of importance. Because the really important things are Yahweh is God's name. Yahweh engaged with Abraham to offer us the ability to participate in his covenant. The terms and conditions of the covenant are, you know, are tens in the 1 to 10 scale of what things are important. How we engage and participate in that covenant so that Yahweh can give us the benefits of the covenant, it's a 10. How the invitations to meet with God in the first 4 of them fulfill the promised benefits of the covenant, that's a 10. And how the last 3 Moed Mikre will be fulfilled over the next 20 years, coinciding with year 6,000 Yah for the last 2. And what they represent is what each of the Moed Mikre, these invitations to meet with God, represent. Now, those are 10s on 1 to 10 scale. And that really brings us to the ultimate question, the ultimate place where Christmas is a problem. It isn't just the fact that Christmas is purely pagan, that it's based upon the Roman, the Greek, the Egyptian, and the Babylonian religious mythology. That's bad, but that's not the worst part of it. The worst part of it is that Christmas and Easter have become the days that have replaced Passover, unyeasted bread, firstborn children, the promise of 7. Teruah, which means to trumpet Yah's message, the day of reconciliations, and Sukkah, where we camp out with God. It's bad that they are pagan and that people are celebrating pagan religious myths. But it's far worse that they have substituted these so that they no longer care about and actually are hostile to the seven invitations that God gave us to participate in parties with Him, to celebrate life with Him. And it's what they replace that is so devastating. We have, and William, I should be able to lock you in, but I'm going to also bring in Tommy, who is calling in for from Virginia. He has a comment for William and also on Christmas. Hello, Tommy. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing today?
Wonderful. Good to hear from you.
Pleased to hear that you guys are on there today. I thought we were going to hear a recording today.
No, this is probably, If the Shattering Myths show was broadcast 7 days a week, then, of course, Easter would be the day that I would most want to do the show because it's probably the most religious of holidays to be exposed and condemned. But since Christmas Day can fall on a weekday when I would normally do the show, I am delighted to be here live condemning, for merciful reasons, the day that so many religious people are celebrating, because it's the most compassionate thing to do. If you can explain to people why Christmas is wrong and Sukkah, tabernacles, to camp out with God is right, then there is hope for individuals who choose to answer God's invitations. Tommy, we've just come to the commercial break. We'll be back in about 2 minutes after the commercials and would love to hear what you have to say. Stay tuned, please. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're with Tommy, who's called in from Virginia. We also have William on the line. Go ahead, Tommy. We want to listen to what you have to say about Christmas, and also I think you had a comment specifically for William, who is also on the line with us.
Well, not necessarily a comment. I just wanted to converse with him. He had sent me an email over the week, this past week, and I was out of town and down in Macon, Georgia, trying to get a car going, and had limited time, and we had a long 8-hour drive to come back, and I wasn't online very much.
Okay.
And he asked about how our kids were dealing with Christmas, and it's been about 10 years since we walked away from Christianity and Christmas and stuff like that, and I had no idea how pagan it was at the time. I remember working really hard, you know, at that time of year I would get an extra job so I could provide a good Christmas for my kids, and then this one year, you know, the mess is all over the living room floor, and you know, the kids are all excited about what they got, and then, you know, they turn around and they look at me and, what's next? And they were ready to go to Grandma's house and get some more toys, you know, and
wow.
I just looked over at my wife, and at the time, I was trying to balance out who Jesus was and who, you know, how much should we share, you know, with Santa, and I looked at my wife, and I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. It's going to be 100% or nothing. And I'm not going to teach my kids to be, you know, brought up to it. It's just to support this consumerism that comes with Christmas, you know. I shouldn't have been working that much. I should have been spending more time with my kids instead of trying to provide things that I thought they want.
Right.
And the first couple of years, well, actually, let me go in one more detail. The next thing I did was Passover. A few months later, you know.
Wow.
And it was, you know, I had no idea what I was getting into, but this walk.
This was 10 years ago. You were doing this before I was doing it.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a hard journey, you know. You just start applying things that your pastor says, you know, you're taking that too serious or this, that, and the other. So, you know, I had this, you know, I'd rather walk alone towards God than listen to what he had to say. And, you know, I did it
We came to the same conclusion for the same reason. You just were in a couple of years in advance of me. And it's kind of like, you know, you recognize there's something terribly unworthy about the religious myth. And so you either have to disengage from it or be willing to live a lie. And if you're not willing to live a lie, you have to disengage. And then once you've disengaged, you have another choice. Do I want to disengage from religion and just be free of it because it's a pile of lies? Or do I want to go and actually see if there is a God and if I can actually come to know him? And then that's an entirely different journey, away from one, but towards the other. And it sounds like you made that transition away from one religion and towards the relationship very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the first couple of years, you know, the parents and the grandparents and their friends, you know, they kind of respected what you're doing, you know. And this is before I actually left religion. I just quit doing Christmas and Easter and stuff like that. And but we'd show up because they would buy the kids presents and stuff. And I'm like, all right, well, I've got the kids some presents, and we're going to have some good food and hang out. But the further I walked away from religion after that, you know, two or three years later, it was almost unbearable. We'd go to the grandparents' house, and, you know, they're snarling at my daughter, Merry Christmas, you know, staring her deep into the eyes, waiting for a reply, knowing well that we've taught our kids not to even, you know, to have nothing to do with it. And so it wasn't that we didn't put up with them or tolerate them or love them and want to be around them. They just made it impossible for us to be around them. And
Tommy, one of the things,
feeling how childish these people are when you start walking towards God and they realize that, you know, well, they pretty much have to realize, like you said, if you want to walk in truth, you have to be real. And these people start looking more like fake characters. And
right.
And
Tommy, one of the things that you said with your motivation tells me why it was such a quick transition from you to walk away from religion to a relationship with Yahweh. And that is, you did it by looking at your children and realizing you were doing the wrong thing for your children, and that it was important that you spend more time with your children, and that the single most important thing you could do with your children is lead them away from lies and lead them to the truth. And for you to do that, you yourself had to walk away from lies and walk to the truth. It's the thing that makes William special, is that he came to exactly the same conclusion for the same reason. He didn't want to. The most important job in William's life is his daughter's. Your children were the most important job in your life, and you couldn't do the right thing for them unless you yourself walked away from religion and towards a relationship with our Heavenly Father. You got the covenant because you understood it in the context of your relationship with your own children.
That's right.
And, you know, that's the most important message that we can convey today. We're out of time, but Tommy, William, thank you so much. You've conveyed the core of what's important to know.